Nice.
Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever or wherever you are listening. Thank you very much for joining us. You are now rocking with the best. As always, big shout out to Brother B, our minister of social information. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, as well as Facebook. And don't forget, we have a Reddit community page and a Spotify Soul on Ice podcast hype list. I have to say that again. When you're looking on Spotify, go to Soul on Ice podcast hype songs. Had a lot of people DMing us asking about trying to find those songs. And, you know, I think people have been just searching the wrong keywords. So it's Soul on Ice podcast hype songs. And that's for your enjoyment. This is our second show in the new season. And our guest today is newly retired man behind the pipes, Al Montoya. Going to be a great interview with him. But first, let me introduce you to my nephews, the Get Busy Boys. Double Trouble is in the house. Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts. What's happening, boys?
Not too much. Just I'm in Brampton right now. Going to head back to Toronto this Monday and just finish my first week of classes. And they've been pretty good so far, pretty interesting. But just been chilling, watching a lot of sports, playing a lot of video games for the most part.
Dig it. Akil Thomas, what's up? What's up?
Yeah, had my first game last night. It was good. So just had practice today. And just today's a regular day. No significance to it at all. Just my sister's birthday, no one else's birthday. Just hanging out and enjoying the day and going to watch some hockey today and have a game tomorrow and Monday. And they're both at home. So definitely kind of excited for those games. And we got the dub in shootout last night, ended up getting a shootout goal. So I'm pretty happy about that.
All right, we're going to talk more about that. And there are more birthdays, Mr. Smart Alec, and we'll get to that as well. But we got a few things to talk about. And before that, before we bring on Al, I just wanted to pay some respects to the legend, Hank Aaron, who passed away this past Friday. We're recording this show on Saturday, the 23rd. So when this comes out, you'll understand some of these back references. But on the 22nd, Hank Aaron passed away. For those who don't know who Hank Aaron was, they used to call him the Hammer. He was a huge influence on young Black athletes in the game of baseball, truly helped open the door and continue the work of Jackie Robinson. Hank was the last Black athlete from the Negro Baseball League on a major league roster. He broke all kinds of records, considered one of the best baseball players of all times, and the Sporting News ranked the Hammer fifth on its all-time 100 greatest baseball players list. The Hall of Famer, the legend, passed away peacefully in bed. No causes was mentioned. But boys, I don't know how much you know about Hank Aaron, but you want to talk about dealing with racial taunts and adversity, but fighting through it. This man's story is the one that people need to know about. And another legend that passed away was the man in the suspenders. He goes by the name of Larry King. He died over the weekend. He was 87 years young. King was such a legendary broadcaster. I used to watch him all the time when he was on CNN. There was a story about him in the Reader's Digest that I read years ago, talking about how he got started. He was a radio announcer first, and I was also a radio announcer at that time when I was reading that article. And I always wanted to, like, one day have my own show and interview amazing people like he did. And I used to study how he would make guests so comfortable. And I always thought, man, this guy is just incredible. So, rest easy, Mr. King. And keeping it moving forward. E, I know that it's, today being the 23rd, it's Akil's sister's birthday. So we got to give her a shout out, but it's also your birthday, my man. E-Double just turned 22 over the weekend. What did you do? What do you got for the people? But before you get into all of that stuff, we got to talk about your Vegas Golden Knights, man. You know, they're on fire right now. There also was a big trade. Patrick Laine used to play for the Winnipeg Jets, and now he's going to Columbus. He's going to be playing with the Blue Jackets. Pierre-Luc Dubois, he's going over to Winnipeg. That's a big trade. Who do you think benefits from that, E? And then, Akil, I need you to kind of chime in on that as well.
Well, first off, thanks for the happy birthday. You know, Akil better start coming at me with some respect now. You got to respect your elders. And there's no way I'm going to allow my son to talk to me that way. But on the trade, I think Columbus won that for sure.
Really?
I think, I mean, Dubois is pretty good. He's pretty young, but like Lonnie's a 50 goal scorer and he's a proven scorer. And I think Roslovic, not only is he one of the best NHL players in the video game in the world, but he's a pretty good forward. And, you know, I don't know if you saw that video, that Dubois shift where he just like literally didn't move for like a good minute. I'm going to go with Columbus won that trade, but I guess only time will tell.
So Elijah wants smoke with Pierre-Luc Dubois is what I'm hearing. Second of all, remember when you forgot Kwame's birthday? I do. I remember that. Anyways,
I remember it because how hurt was I? What do you mean? I remember that. Like,
yeah,
all day I'm sitting there. I'm calling Akil. I said, Akil, like, what's up, man? Like, you know, I thought me and Elijah were cool. Like, and Akil was nice enough to say, man, Kwams, don't worry about it, old man. Like, you know, I'm sure he's thinking about you in spirit. So yeah,
let's take one step back, old man. I know your memory's starting to fade a little bit, but. I didn't forget your birthday. I just forgot to add a video to your birthday video. If so you remember, I texted you on your birthday. I didn't forget your birthday.
Akil, break down how he remembered to text me on my birthday.
Yeah. So Brother B, shout out to him. He posted a picture saying it was your birthday. And I think, 3 minutes and 43 seconds after, you got a text from Elijah saying happy birthday. So
coincidence? Really,
yeah, probably not. No. So if that picture wasn't posted, you're probably getting iced.
Iced, you know.
Anyway, and are we going to talk about something else?
Akil, were you in Germany when you sent me the video? When you sent the video from
I was.
You were so busy in Germany. You're trying to stay away from COVID. You're trying to practice. You're trying to work out. You're trying to do all this. And you took the time to send the old man a nice little video, and Elijah, who's in his cozy apartment in downtown Toronto, living like a king, couldn't even take 2 seconds to send me a birthday shout out. But you know what? It's all good.
You know, way to make a guy feel shitty on his birthday. Good job, Tom. No, I did want to celebrate my birthday, but I might just go cry in a corner and think of how I could be a better person.
Anyways, a little backstory on why Elijah said Jack Roslovic was the best NHL player. Or NHL, like the video game player. Elijah and I, we've played a million games against each other, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he'd always pick Winnipeg as his team. Like, that was his go-to team a lot of the time, mostly because Lion A would just, like, score on the power play every time I took a penalty. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, I don't know if Elijah knows him. I don't think he knows him. I think he knows people who know him.
No, I don't know him at all.
Yeah, but someone told Lige that, like, Jack Roslovic is, like, low-key, like, really good. He just hasn't got a chance or whatever. So whenever Lige plays as Winnipeg, like, he'll put him on, like, the second line or whatever. And every time, like, he goes on the ice, Lige's like, oh, Roslovic's out there. Like, he's going to score. And every game, Roslovic has, like, 2 points, like, 2 goals or whatever. And it's just, like, I don't even know who this guy is. But Lige loves him for some unknown reason. And it's just, like, an example of how, like, Lash picks the most random things to kind of emphasize. So
that's funny story there. That's a GM in him.
Yeah, honestly. But actually, maybe if he can find hidden stones like or hidden gems like that, like maybe he is gonna be a good GM one day.
Who knows? So what are your thoughts on the trades and you know what's been going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you need goal scoring. So I think for Columbus, it's like if one of our star players doesn't want to be here, like get him out of here. career, obviously, and they got a 50 goal score and a obviously one of the best players in a couple of years, maybe, along with it. So, like, I think Columbus probably won it. Pierre-Luc Dubois is actually like a nasty player too. He's still young. He's only 2 years older than me, so he's like 24. So he could end up being like a really, really, really good player. I think he will be. So I think down the road, I think down the road, Winnipeg probably won this. But I think as of now, like, Lainey's going to step in and score, you know, whatever, 35 goals this year or whatever. He's going to do well. So I think for the time being, but down the road, I think Winnipeg won it.
The one reason why I think, like, this could help Winnipeg, like, win now is because, like, I don't know if there's a better, like, three center, like, trio, like, in the league. Like, to have, like, depth at your center position, like, down the lineup is, like, pretty important, obviously. And I also found it, like, kind of funny that, like, they were drafted, like, 2-3 and then, like, got traded for each other in the same year. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty interesting how, like, if they thought about it all back then, like, they could have had the players that they got now. It's just funny how it all works out.
One thing I heard someone say the other day, like, Laine's kind of, you know, he's replaceable. Like, there's goal scorers out there. You know what I mean? If, you know, like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, you can't just get a player like him. You have to, like, pay a big price, and he's so valuable. He can be used in a lot of different ways and stuff like that. So I think, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois is probably more valuable, like, for a franchise standpoint, but, know, if your team needs goal scoring, obviously Lyon is the guy to go with.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes some of these trades look great at the very beginning, and then down the road they're pretty bad. I mean, I remember when Montreal traded PK for Weber. You know, you see who's benefiting from that trade right now. So you just never know. Sometimes you got a good GM that's looking for the long term, not the short term. Big shout out to P.O. Joseph and Keandre Miller. They had a great game against each other and both pulling, you know, getting their first points in the NHL. I think that's great. How important is it for young guys like that coming into the league to get that first point under their belt?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, it's the first step of, you know, feeling comfortable, feeling like you belong there, and like it adds confidence for sure, just to kind of get that out of the way and start to feel good, start to feel like, you know, I belong here. It's like, it's the best thing, you know, as a young guy, as a rookie. So big shout out to them. I've been watching Keandre Miller quite a bit. He looks really good. He doesn't look like a rookie out there. He looks really good. He looks like he's been there for a few years. So shout out to him too. He's looking real good. But didn't watch Pittsburgh last night with PO, but you know, I'm sure he did well too. So
yeah, and I think for like as a defenseman, like I don't think they care about really putting up points, because like they know usually as defensemen, like coming into the league, other than like Romanov or like when Hughes and Makar came in, like usually you're just gonna start on like that third pair and like not play any power play or PK, and you just kind of want to be like steady. So I think it does add to the fact that that they got their first point. It makes it pretty good. But I think just getting like wins and playing well defensively and just kind of knowing that you can stick with those guys.
Also, shout out to the NWHL starting up their you know, their league this weekend. I watched a little bit of the Riveters game against the Toronto. It was actually pretty good. I thought it was really interesting that they're, you know, they're broadcasting it on Twitch, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how it comes across when they get to the finals and they play and they show the games on NBC in the States. So that's really cool. Sora Tinker, she was she plays for the Riveters. She took a knee with a couple other ladies. So big shout out to those ladies for continuing the message. Akil, you talked about this at the beginning of the show, that you had your you had a game and you scored, you got yourself on the score sheet. Talk about the game, because I know you've been itching to play, and talk about that first goal.
Yeah, well, the reason why people think it scored is because I posted a story of me like going down the bench, whatever. It was a shootout goal, so it wasn't really a goal, but I'll take it. I scored, whatever.
Goal's a goal.
Yeah, no, it was good. Good game. Started off pretty, pretty scrambly. Obviously, it's our first game in what, 10 months or whatever. For the most part. So started off kind of rough. They scored first shift. They're a big team, mean, big and fast. So it was a tough adjustment the first couple of minutes, but we got going. We played pretty good as a team. Q scored our first goal. Ended up kind of having to leave the game with a lower body injury, but he'll be back like super soon. Nothing serious at all. So after he got hurt, I kind of had to start playing more because we only had three centermen. So definitely kind of gassed my first game. I didn't feel my like the best physically, but hopefully I'll feel better tomorrow. Did really good on draws, I think 65%. Happy about that. Won the big draws, like PK draws and stuff. We ended up shorthanded going into overtime. We took a penalty with like 48 seconds left in the game.
Oh, wow.
So it was a little scary. We killed it. We killed the 48 seconds left or whatever. But going into overtime, it's 4-on-3, and we're playing against Ryan Merkley, like one of the best offensive players I've ever seen in my life. So definitely a little nerve-wracking. I got put out there to kind of kill it in overtime, so I was happy about that. And we did a really good job and ended up kind of closing out in shootout. I kind of just went 5-hole. My roommate Tyler Madden had a sick move. You can see it on the Ontario Reign Instagram. They have the videos, the shootouts there, and awesome moving. We buried, I think, 3 out of our 3, and then they only buried 1, so we ended up winning. And yeah, it was it felt unreal to actually like get back to the locker room and like knowing we just won, like playing music. It's just a feeling I haven't had in so long because there's no season, and obviously in Berlin we were like 1-7. So it was really good to kind of, you know, feel that feeling of, you know, we won. It's a good day. So
nice. Yeah. Good. Congrats, man.
Were you expecting to go 5-hole on that goal? Because like, from all the time like we've practiced and like played together, I don't think I've ever seen you like go 5-hole on like a breakaway.
Yeah, you know what?
I mean, I might be giving your secret away to some goalie that's listening, but
no, that's fine. It's okay. They can't stop it. but one thing with Elijah and I, like whenever I've gone in shootout or whatever, usually I'll try to find Elijah just so we could like banter about something stupid, like Burger King and chicken nuggets and stuff. So I'm not thinking about, you know, my move too much. Cause when you think about it too much, like your timing's off, it's not natural. Like you just do stuff before you should, and it's just not good. So try to get my mind off of it. Yesterday was good because obviously it's our first game. Like I have no idea who the coach is going to pick. Like I wasn't thinking anything. And, as soon as coach found out we were shooting first, he's like, okay, Akil, you're going. So I was like, all right, like I'm just gonna go down and we'll see what happens. So I just went down, wasn't thinking, saw 5-hole, put it there, and it went in. So try not to think too much these days. And yeah, I haven't gone 5-hole that much, but I think that's why I chose it, because I haven't done it that much, and I saw it open. So
do you see it like that, like when you guys are going in on a breakaway, do you see? Because, you know, from a viewer and from a person who's not playing, it almost looks like it's luck. But what are some of the telltale signs that a goalie is giving you that 5-hole that you like, oh, there it goes, and boom?
Well, it's actually it's like a major skill to be able to go 5-hole. And, like, you almost have to have, like, such patience because it only opens up for, like, a split second. And you got to be able to, like, put the puck there. And I'd honestly say, like, majority of the time you see a 5-hole goal, like, it's not luck, it's just skill. And, like, one of our teammates, Akil and I, like, Jason Robertson, like, I've never seen anyone, like, go 5-hole as much as him. And you just, like, it's, like, something he, like, actually, like, works on. Like, he'll shoot, like, from the half hole on the power play, and he'll go 5-hole. And you think, like, how in the world did that go in? But it's just, it's a skill, and it's, like, it's pretty hard to develop that skill, especially as goalies get better and bigger. And a lot of the time, if you do it and it doesn't go in, you kind of look like dumb. Like, why would you attempt that? But it definitely, I don't think it's luck at all.
So I'll tell you guys something. Jason Robertson, goal scorer, Elijah and I both played with him. Got traded to Peterborough last year, played with his brother, Nick Robertson. I didn't know how good he was until I played with him. Obviously, ended up making the Leafs a bit last year. Like, unbelievable goal scorer, hardest shot I've ever seen. And their ability to go five hole is not luck. They work on it. They shoot five hole a couple times in practice. Like, they will not miss. And I was just watching, I don't know, Pete's put out something about, like, Nick Robertson's goals or whatever. And, like, I bet you he probably scored at least 35% of his goals five hole last year. So, and it's like shots that if he shot anywhere else because of the positioning and because of the pressure on him, like, he may not have scored. So just having that ability to, like, shoot five hole in the place he does is actually something that gets him a couple more goals a year. And the thing is, so the goalie, you know, puts a stick down, he has his pads there or whatever, right? A lot of people try to put it maybe above, like, the goalie stick or right below it if the goalie stick isn't on the ice, because sometimes it's not, or sometimes the goalie stick is, like, a little bit to the side and they just go between the legs. But what they do is they shoot basically underneath the pad, because when goalies go down, like, there's a spot where, like, yeah, I mean, if you go down fast enough, like, they'll stop it. But it's like Jason Robertson and Steven Dillon would do 10 shootouts after every practice, and he knew he was going to go five hole like 10 times. But Jason got it in that spot. That's where it's like, if Stevie knows he's doing it, he can still score. And if he goes down too fast, it'll open up something else. So it's something that, like, the goalie can know that you're doing, but it's impossible to stop. So it's crazy.
Very interesting. And for the audience, our soul brothers and soul sisters, you just heard the nerdiest explanation for a five hole ever in your life. But that's how much of a scientist of the game of hockey Akil Thomas is. Before we get to Al Montoya, I want to mention to our listeners that February is just around the corner, and it's, of course, Black History Month. And we here at the show we're going to be celebrating the month with some great guests and some great conversations about what that month means to us as people of color in this industry of hockey. I don't want to say who we're going to have on the show. We never do anyways, but you know, the league, being the NHL, has some great themes each week that we'll be a part of. So week one will be dedicated to past achievements of Black athletes. Week two is dedicated to the achievements of Black women in the game of hockey. Then week three will highlight great moments in Black hockey history. And finally, week four will be about the future. And I know Killer over here, Akil Thomas, will be a part of that with the league and with the LA Kings. So really excited to share that with you guys, and really excited to share some great history that's a part of the game, and some great content for the month of February. And of course, Brother B will be killing it online. So again, make sure, if you haven't already, link us on Instagram, Facebook, as well as Twitter. All right, guys, let's do this. Let's get to our first guest of the season, bringing you some Latino heat, some Latin lingo, the big man, Al Montoya. All right, let's get down. Our next guest today is an 85er born in the Chi. That's Chicago, for those who don't know. Drafted by the New York Rangers in the first round, sixth overall back in 2004. He represented his country in the World Juniors, backstopping the team to its first gold medal at the 2004 tournament in Finland. He's the first Cuban-American to play in the NHL. Let me introduce you to Al Latino Heat Montoya. What's going on, my brother?
My man, Kwame, thanks for having me. It's a blast. I've been looking forward to it for a long time.
This is awesome, man. How's it going with you? How's it going with the family? Everybody's doing good?
Yeah, everyone's good here. You know, it's like we say, we're taking it one day at a time, trying to not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Now, I know you guys got the ice rink in the backyard. Are the kids taking advantage of that ice?
That's a great question. You know, some days I got to pull them out there. I'm just like, give dad 10 minutes. That's all we want. And then other days I can't take them off the ice. So you know what? I'll take what I can get right now.
Well, we got a lot to talk about. Once again, thank you for joining us. You recently retired. So we've got to talk about life after hockey and what that's going to look like for you going forward. But I wanted to start with the beginning. And as I said at the top, you are the first Cubano to play in the National Hockey League. And we know it's only a matter of time when some young Cuban American or Canadian falls in your footsteps. So let's start by talking about your family. Tell us about your parents and how they got you into hockey in the first place.
That's awesome. Well, I'm the son of two immigrants. My dad was born in Medellin, Colombia. My mom in Havana, Cuba. I was raised by my mother, single mother, and my grandparents. You know, they fled the communist regime in 1963. Grandfather and mom made the sacrifices to give me that better life. And ever since I can remember, I've had a love and passion for hockey. Mm. You know, and for me, it's been about sports transcending. I never felt like an immigrant on the ice. You know, as wild as it is to say that, the second I put on that helmet as a young kid, it didn't matter that at home I spoke a different language. Once we got on that ice, it was just like, it was like an art. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty common for, you know, young players who are getting into the game to, you know, want to play goalie. I remember when I was younger, every Christmas I'd ask my dad for goalie gear and I'd beg my mom to let me play and stuff. And one year my dad had enough of it. And I guess he bought me goalie stuff and he brought me to the rink and I was so excited. And I just remember kind of hopping on the ice, excited to play goalie for the first time. And I remember him like shooting the puck as hard as he could. And I was just like, in my head, I was thinking like, I don't know why my dad's trying to hurt me right now. And I see him going over to his teammates, telling them something. And next thing you know, his teammates coming down and he rips one like off the crossbar. I'm like 6 years old. I'm like, I don't like this anymore. So my dad kind of did that on purpose for me. But wanted to know for you, you know, what kind of made you fall in love with, you know, wanting to be a goalie?
That is an awesome point. And I say this to a lot of my friends in the hockey world, and I don't mean it in a bad way. Like I said earlier, I was raised by my single mother, right? Mm. So all she cared about was, you know, that American dream, giving you opportunities that she didn't have. So when we got to the rink, she had never seen anything like it in her life. And I say the reason that I became a goalie is because I was raised by my mother and not my father. Because I believe if I had a father like you, he would have done the same thing. Buzz shots by my head, said, get the heck out of the net. You're too good of a skater.
Right.
But everything happened for a reason. And that love and that passion transcended. And being a goalie for me, you know how it goes. When you play house league, the bag goes around, right? The bag went around to me and I was like, shoot, I love this. The next year I couldn't go to tryouts for travel. The coach calls me up because he knows I like to play. He's like, come over to the team and be travel. I said, all right, one thing, coach, I just want to be goalie. He's like, no way in heck are you going to be the goalie. Well, I said, my mom ends up telling him, if you want him on your team, he says he wants to be the goalie and I support his decision no matter what.
That's awesome. I wish someone would have let me play goalie, but no, you know, I heard that you quit hockey when you were 14 to play football and, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, why that happened and, you know, how it may have helped you in the long run.
That's awesome. You know, like growing up as a kid, growing up as a minority, you want to assimilate, right? You come to this country, your parents come to this country and you want American culture to be your culture, right? So for as long as I can remember, I did what did I do? I did baseball, soccer, football, hockey. But like, you know, hockey pulls you away at a young age. And I wasn't quite ready for that. I had an older brother that I admired and idolized, who ended up playing football at the Naval Academy. He was a big boy, 6'8", 300 pounds. Mm. But I wanted to play football in high school and have a normal high school freshman year, right? So I got to play hockey, got to play football. But by the end of that, by the end of that season, I realized hockey was my true love because I started skipping hockey or football practices for hockey. And then the rest was really history.
That's interesting. You know, as the only kid from a different culture playing hockey in Chicago, did you feel like an outsider at some points? And if so, how did you deal with it from such a young age?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, you come to this sport in this country and you want to attach and you want to say, this is my culture. You know, at home, I felt like I was in Cuba at home, you know, with my mother and my grandparents. First language was Spanish. The second I stepped outside, it was like, boom, 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 culture shock. You know, a lot of my adolescence, it was trying to figure out where I fit in. I remember in the second grade, we're at parent-teacher conference, and the teacher looks to my mom and she says, I'm a little worried about Alvaro. He doesn't speak. My mom goes, what the heck, he doesn't speak? He speaks two languages at home. So right then, I started to understand, you know, there's this difference in where I wanted to feel included, but I never really did. Not that it was intentional. It's just I knew I was a little bit different than the rest or my neighborhood.
Your 2018 Oilers team had a lot of diversity. You had Kara, Nurse, Jones, yourself, Bear. How cool is it to kind of have a lot of diversity on your team, and how impactful was that for you?
I mean, it's unbelievable to go onto one team and have so many different walks of life. It really, and also let's think about it. It's at the end of my career. So you like to think that's the way the game is going. I know I've had past conversations that I've really developed a kinship. Like you would walk into a locker room and sometimes there would be the Russians or the Swedes or people from different backgrounds. I found this like kinship with those guys because maybe people from North America wouldn't really understand it. But for myself, I got the culture. I got the not feeling connected or wanting to adopt a culture or be one of the guys in the locker room that sometimes can be misunderstood.
So where did the love of the game come from for you? And when did you realize this is all you wanted to do?
Right. You know, for me, it started at an early age. I loved hockey. I knew hockey was one of my things. And then once I got to being 14 years old, freshman in high school, you know, everybody's like, if you go to play high school hockey, you'll never go anywhere. And I said, you know what? This is the path for me. And like I told Akil, once I started skipping hockey or football practices for hockey, that next year, I was playing in the North American League with Texas Tornadoes at 15 years old.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm committed. This is what I want to do. 16, I go to play for Ann Arbor or Team USA out of Ann Arbor. And then from there, I think in the first week, I had already had discussions with University of Michigan to accelerate and graduate and play the next year at 17 years old.
Jeez.
Crazy how young they do things, you know, in terms of, you know, commitments and all that recruiting stuff in the States. It's actually scary. But obviously, you know, fighting's a part of our game. And, you know, I guess at the beginning of your career, there's obviously more fights and not so much anymore. But, you know, the fans really like hockey fights, and they even love goalie fights a little bit more. And so you fought Corey Crawford. So talk to us a little bit about that experience and, you know, what you remember and, you know, if it was your first fight, you know, how many fights you had and kind of how you felt in that experience.
Everybody loves goalie fights. Goalie fights is the best.
If you can get your arms out of the sleeves or, you know, what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Kwame called me, the Latino Heat. I used to, you know, we used to go to tournaments in Canada. It was like the fiery Chicagoans, you know, like for me, it's that passion that exuded. I remember that fight, if you want to even call it a fight. We had played in Norfolk the night before, and I was with Hartford, and these teams were built, like you said, Keel, these teams were built differently back then. Your fourth line was like, holy smokes, right? So the night before, there was a scrum, and my old veteran goalie, Steve Valiquette's like, Monty, did you see what that guy was doing last night? And I was like, what are you talking about, Valley? And I'm never one to back down. So he was like, he was giving a couple jabs. He's 30 years old. I think I was 20. So I'm like, whatever you say, Valley. I love the guy still. So the next thing I know, the next night is a huge, you know, melee, back and forth, back and forth. Corey, all of a sudden, I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is green light. Let's go. Corey Crawford's drinking his water bottle. Mm-hmm. Al Montoya is skating down the ice. I'm like, what am I doing? This guy's drinking his water bottle. He's nowhere ready for this. I get down there. I fall. The ref's like, Montoya, you're out of here. Crawford's like, no, let's do this. So then we got to do it, and that was pretty exciting and fun, but probably the last time, hopefully, I did that.
Nice.
You mentioned the American dream and how your mom wanted you to have that. Is there anything you think that could be done to get more Hispanic players in the game?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that question is one that I hit every single day. You know, for me, how do I start to think about it? I think about it as a fan. As a kid, I always said I never really watched hockey. I was always too busy playing. You know, it didn't help that Chicago, they didn't put games on TV. Mm. But once I really became a fan is when I turned pro. Once I had someone that I could connect to. Once I saw a teammate go up. Once I saw a teammate get traded. That's when I really became a fan. So maybe you need to make that personal connection. So maybe these Hispanic kids or these families, they need to find that connection. And it's you know, our job to tell these stories, because maybe they're not going to connect to hockey, but they can connect to a story and stuff like that. And just through my personal experience, using players that played the game, that walked in their shoes, that have similar stories, we support each other in the Hispanic community.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I think something important is like, you know, kids knowing that Austin Matthews comes from, you know, Hispanic heritage, like for kids to kind of make a personal connection and to look up to someone who may look like them or is similar in some way, shape or form. I think that's huge. For me growing up, like seeing PK Subban come into the league and be like a household name right off the bat, it was like, it was big for me. I was just like, I want to be as big as PK. I want to be a, you know, a household name like him. So I think, having someone to actually look at and be like, you know, that guy looks like me or he's like me, it's something I think that's very important.
And you know what, to just second all that, you know, Al, you and I talk about this off the show all the time about the importance and especially your importance, you know, as the, you know, the first Hispanic speaking player in the league. What does that mean for you to have that title? And now that you're retired, how are you going to take your experience to help grow the game in the Hispanic community, to get more Hispanic boys and girls into the game? I know we talked a little bit about that from Elijah's question, but you know, just from a perspective of you, of your contributions to the game, you know, what are some of the things you're looking forward to do?
Right. So for me, it's right. I was this trailblazer in the sense, the first one to do it. Not only is my name Alvaro Montoya with Spanish origin or Hispanic origin, I grew up in the culture. It was everywhere I went. So trailblazer in that sense, but now that I'm done playing, I truly believe that I can leave a bigger mark on this game. And that is, you know, going to communities, knowing what's relevant. How do you know what's relevant? Because you live that life, because you are living that life. So for me, it's all about inclusion and using appropriate inclusion, right? So having a hockey player translate this message or tell a similar story that can connect all these communities. And the thing that I always run back to is, you know, Hispanics are too hard to reach because they're too multifaceted. And I think that's just a cop-out because for me, maybe my story is unique, right? But we support each other. Like I said earlier, and the Hispanics support each other. Whether you're from Dominican Republic, Cuba, Mexico, anywhere in Latin America, most likely your family, your grandparents fled, you know, an oppressed regime to come here to give you a better life. And those are the stories that bring us together. Those are the ones that really send a message that are like, okay, you're telling these stories from your platform. The NHL is telling these stories. We feel like we're coming to you now.
There's so many goalies who have weird like pregame routines, or I think it was Holtby I saw the other day who just kept putting his head back and forth for like 30 seconds straight. Was there anything that you did like that? And what was your kind of pregame routine like?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, my pregame routine, you know what? When I started off like you guys, I would drive myself bonkers because it would turn into I did this thing before last game and I got a shutout, right? So then I would have to do that again. And then I had a bad game, so I wouldn't do this. And then I would do that. I would play so many freaking games with my head that once I really figured it out, I just played. You know what I would do? I would put my skates on an hour before the game. I got this from Jager. I would put my skates on an hour before the game. I'd step on the ice, feel my edges. I'd be like, okay, we're good. Go have fun. Because you've put that work in to get to that point. You've battled your butt off in practices and prepared. Now just go play, because nothing else really matters. It doesn't matter if you think about it. The more you think about it, you're just going to get tired, right?
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Do you guys have rituals?
Well, I know Elijah has this one ritual where he ties his skates and stuff up, and then he goes and sits on the bench and just, I don't know what he does. Just mentally, it's prepared. I guess you can speak on that, Lige.
Yeah. I was kind of like you at first. I was like all in my own head, and if I didn't do things the same way, it would start to get to me. And then I kind of realized you just got to play. But the one thing that I kept is I'd go on the bench and tie my skates there, just take like 10 minutes alone. And then I pray right before I walk back in the room every single time. Just kind of pray for safety and to have a good game. And that's pretty much it. I think, like you said, if you start to get in your own head, that's when the game becomes complicated. And if you just go out and play, it's pretty simple.
I love it.
What was yours, Kiel? You have one?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through, it's weird. I've gone through a lot of different phases. You know, I've been through a phase where, you know, I'd be on the way to the rink and, you know, it just, I got stopped at, you know, a couple more red lights than usual. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to have a turnover first shift. Like for sure. Like dash one first shift. Or I'd be taping my stick and, you know, you obviously want to tape your stick well, and you don't want to have any, like, you know, screw ups in the tape job. And if I screw it up, I'm just like, we're losing 4-1 tonight. Like, what am I doing? So I definitely used to, you know, have it be kind of tough on myself like that. But it's weird. I can, in like a switch, I could just switch and just not care about anything, and then just have no routine and just kind of show up to the rink and be ready to go. It's kind of like a battle for sure mentally, just because, you know, you want to be dialed in, you want to be consistent with everything, so you perform consistently. But at the same time, sometimes you just gotta, you know, believe in yourself and go out there and play. But two words that stuck out to me when Lodger was speaking was goalies and weird. So I feel like it's something that people who aren't involved in hockey just won't understand, right? But I want to get your point of view and see what you have to say about you know, goalies being, you know, those odd different guys.
Goalies are weird, man. What are you going to do? They are definitely weird. You got to stand in front of this puck. You got to take a beating. You know, what's the whole thought? When you get scored on 20,000 people are letting you know about it. I love it. I love representing goalies. I love everything it entails. I love being that last line of defense. You know, it's what drives me, especially when I was playing it. It's what made me want to keep going, you know. So goalies being weird will never change. You know, I always got, maybe you're one of the more normal ones, Monty, but behind my back, they were probably saying something totally different. Like, this guy's, you know, because I did have some of those routines where I'd be making saves. I'd be doing flips through the locker room. They're like, what's this? What's wrong with this guy?
Well, you see, Elijah and I have a really good friend who's a goalie, and like, he's completely normal. If you would have meet him, you'd be like, this guy's completely normal. I think that's probably why he's bad at goalie. But anyways, you went from you know, wearing flip-flops to the rink every day in Florida playing for the Panthers there to shoveling 472 feet of snow in Montreal the year after, and they're pretty much on the opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to media scrutiny. So how'd you deal with that, and you know, what was it like playing in Montreal?
That's a good one. But let's not forget, I went from Winnipeg before Florida, right? Mm, so I knew what I was kind of getting into when I went back up north. Gotcha. Opportunity, well, first off, the opportunity to play in Montreal is always a kid's dream, at least mine, to play in Canada, to play where the game matters so much and it's been built up in the history and the tradition. But I wasn't fooled for a second that I knew that market is what it is. And
yeah.
It's like, to whom much is given, much is expected, right? And that's what they live by, because not only is the scrutiny really tough, whatever you want to call it, but it is a first class organization, right? So you get everything you want. You know, equipment, meals, family's taken care of. That's pro. Like, to me, that excited me. That motivated me. In my first year there, we had a heck of a year. Media loved us. Next year, it wasn't so good of a year. So you get to learn and live, and you move with it, and you roll with it, and you hope you grow. And I'm grateful for every stop that I had along the way. That's for sure.
That's dope. Now that you're done playing, what have you been doing? I know you're part of some committees with the NHL. Speak as much as you can about that and why you wanted to work so closely with the league in your life after hockey.
Yeah, you know, for me, I've really had the chance to be deliberate on where I want to take my second career. I have passion for hockey, right? I have passion for my culture. I have passion for underrepresented communities. So it seems like an easy mix. Bring it together. My work with NHL, the things that they are doing there to make this game more inclusive, you can only say good things about. It's fantastic. It's not short-term goals. That's the thing. People want to see new goals, diversified leadership overnight, but that's not how it works, you know. We hope to look back 20 years from now and to say we look like the rest of North America, right?
Yeah.
In the way that's – and that's the ultimate goal. And it's not a quick fix, and that's what excites me. So, like, I go back to my playing days in Florida. As a Cuban-American, getting the chance to play in South Florida was one of my highlights of my life. If I could have picked a team, I remember right before I got drafted by the Rangers, I think Florida was somewhere in the mix. And that was one of my dreams, because to go down there, all I knew, that was like my second home, right? My parents came from Cuba, stopped in Florida, and that's where my life began. So I get the chance to go down to South Florida, 2 million Cubans, and this is like a full-time job. And I'm like, gosh, I'm on a weekly radio show. I'm in the media. I'm doing television, Univision in Spanish, awesome stuff. But at the same time, as you guys know, I'm trying to stay in this league, and it's a day-to-day job, right?
Right.
Not like, oh, I got this 5-year contract, I'm going to just sit back and, you know, spread the wealth, and because it's what I would have wanted to do. But so now that I have this opportunity to give back to this game that's given me so much, it only seems like this easy fix. And, you know, I left Florida, and I remember someone saying there was like this Montoya effect, that now Spanish-speaking people were coming to games that didn't even care about the game. I'd be sitting on the bench, guys. I have a Hall of Famer in the net, Roberto Luongo, and I'd hear the people in the stands saying, put Montoya in the net. You know what I mean? And that's exciting. And that they didn't care. They didn't know if I could stop the puck or not. They just knew the stories, that they knew that they could connect. So, you know, I've partnered with a publishing company to write a children's book on my family's immigration and my success at the NHL, you know, to show that we can play and we can be fans. So it's just little things like this, you know, reaching out to constituents throughout the hockey world or the non-hockey world, even, you know, the Team Colombia, Team Mexico, Puerto Rico, just trying to grow the game as much as I can. And really, I guess for me, it's about landing somewhere that sees my value or my unique background.
I know there's a couple of teams right now. I can't remember which ones, but I know there's a couple of teams that have some Spanish language broadcasters right now. And I think that's really awesome. Do you see yourself maybe contributing to some of these teams that are doing that down the road?
I love it. I think that's great. You know, you're saying, you know what, here we are. We're going to speak to you. We're going to speak to you in your language, which is part of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think to myself, most Hispanics here in the United States, I mean, at least the ones here in the United States, consume in English, right? So even though you're my grandparents who came here not speaking the language at all, they're gone. So it's still about, you know, connecting. What we're doing by putting those games in Spanish, we're saying we're coming to you. And I think that's what we have to do next, right? It's not anymore we have the best game in the world, because we do, but we can't rely on that anymore. There's too much going on. And I saw that in South Florida. If you don't have if there's not a Marlins game, there's a Panthers game, there's the beach, there's the ocean. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we have to say, we want you now, right? It's not like we've ever been exclusive, but now we're going for you.
Before you go, E, when it comes to the broadcasting, do you feel it would be better to have a Spanish language broadcast team, or do you feel that the Spanish speaking broadcasters should be combined with the English speaking broadcasters and just make it one whole and just kind of go in and out just for the Spanish speaking people? Cause like you said, you know, they don't necessarily want to hear the game in Spanish. They want to hear it in English, but I think sprinkled with some Spanish would be kind of cool, right?
That's awesome, Juan. Like Spanglish is what we hear all day long here, you know, like, and my mom, when I call mom, it's Spanglish. When I call, you know, it's Spanglish, and that's how we communicate. And, you know, that old generation, which is beautiful to hear the Spanish language, but you still want to, you don't want to not connect with that young generation, right? Mm-hmm. And that young generation, like you guys know, cares more about this stuff and diversity and growing the game and inclusion more than any other generation, which is awesome.
Akil and I, we played together in Niagara, and over the time we've had so many teammates who have been signed to the NHL, and other teammates who are just pretty good at hockey. And a lot of them, when we talk to them about school, they just think, oh, I'm going to the NHL, I don't need to take classes. Akil was one of those guys who took classes anyway, but you decided after all these years of playing to go back, finish up your degree. Why did you decide to go and do that? And why do you think it's important for the current players to kind of, when they're done playing, go back to school and finish up what they started?
That's an awesome question. You know what? It's not for everybody. You're going to make me a little teary eye because I go back to my grandfather, right? Manolo Silva. And the one thing he passed down to my family that I imagine was passed down from his dad: they can take everything away from us, but they can't take away our knowledge. They can't take away our education. And that, like, you know, when they fled the regime, they came here with an education, which was a blessing. My mother grew up on a couch, but she put herself through school and medical school by herself, right? So now I can go into another business and do it without the degree and the classes. But for me, it's about continuing this education and showing my kids that even, you know, with obstacles, you still can get it done.
Yeah. You know, for Blacks in the game, fans or players, there's always been these stereotypes that you'd hear, and I'd always hear them when I was growing up. What are some of the myths when it comes to the Hispanic community that we need to be aware of as we are in this space, trying to include the Latin voice and growing the game in that community?
Yeah, I mean, every time someone would see my name and have a conversation, Juan Pablo, why are you not a race car driver? You know what I mean? Or like, why aren't you playing baseball? It's the same kind of comments, but that stuff excited me because it's like, all right, I'm not a token, but I'm a first, right? I'm doing it. So we're starting this conversation. And then the other one being, you know, you don't really, you know, I'll use my brother as an example. My half brother, David Walsh. He's 6'8", 300 pounds, Irish father. But grew up in our household, full blown Spanish. But you would never look at him and be like, he's Hispanic, right?
Okay.
So that's the kind of struggle that I think Hispanics deal with in this nation. You're never fully included. And then, you know, you're always trying to grab on somewhere, but there's always someone, as you know, who says, this is not you, or this is not for you.
So, Al, this is my first year pro, first year, you know, with the Ontario Reign here. And so I've been to, you know, three NHL camps, and I feel like I've met a million guys. Like, there's even the last few weeks, there's been guys joining us from the coast and just us signing random guys and stuff like that. So feels like I've had a lot of teammates before my first regular season game. Who'd you say are your top three, you know, favorite teammates? And I know that's probably the hardest question of all time, but if you
could
pinpoint three,
yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Oh gosh. Let's say influential.
Okay.
Cause you know how it is, this hockey world, man, there are some fantastic people in it, right? So let's go back to my early days drafted by the New York Rangers, Jaromír Jágr. Didn't speak much to rookies. 10 years later, I'm saddled up next to him, and it's like this passion for this guy. I had this young rookie that started off with him, and all of a sudden we're sitting next together and we're next to each other, and it's like this common bond. And I idolized him like most guys in the hockey world. And who do I go after next? I'll move over to Arizona. My time with Arizona, Shane Doan, influential, accepting, bringing you in, making you feel like you're number one. I'm like, these people make the world go round. And then let's finish with one of my last goalie partners that I ever had, Carey Price. One of the best people in the world.
What's he like?
This guy, man, he's the most unassuming guy you could ever imagine. Quiet, backpack on his shoulder, getting ready to go to work, steps on that ice. If he doesn't want you to score on him, you're not scoring today, tomorrow, or the day after.
Right.
Right? But that passion, that competitiveness comes out. It's contagious. Those are the kind of people that you want to be around. Mm.
You're talking about like influential players being brought in. Akil and I have both played, I think, three different cities, three different communities. Playing in like Montreal, Edmonton. How was it adjusting to new communities? And did those communities kind of do a good job of bringing you in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't say I ever had a hard transition. You know what? I think about the when we get traded or we move around to teams, and the hockey world's so small that no matter what, wherever you go, you're joining a group of 20 that want to accept you, right? Normally. And I think of my wife that had to move around to all these cities that had nothing, you know, and she had to form these bonds. And so whether it was going from Winnipeg to Florida or Florida to Montreal or Montreal to Edmonton, they're hockey communities and they want you to succeed. And I really felt genuine support from everywhere we went.
Did you like Edmonton when you were there? I used to live there. I lived there for like 8 years.
Yeah, I liked Edmonton. It was quick, but like I said, it's the hockey world. And like these guys are talking about it, they're progressive. I mean, our team, we had all different colors, like of all the color wheel, right? But that wasn't the first time they did that. I've seen on here before, you've had the old Edmonton Oilers on here, and they've been doing that for years.
Yeah, yeah. Craft Hockeyville, which, you know, I thought was just a thing that we did here in Canada, and I just realized that they do it also in America. The American winner last year, before the pandemic, was from El Paso, the El Paso County Coliseum in El Paso, Texas. They will be rewarded $150,000 in rink upgrades from Kraft Heinz and $10,000 worth of new equipment from the NHLPA Goals and Dreams Fund. El Paso is predominantly Hispanic. What are your thoughts on how this is great for the growth of the game of hockey?
Oh, I mean, are you kidding me? They're screaming from the rooftops, and I love it. It's they want, right? What helps you assimilate in this country? Sports more than anything. It transcends. And the fans down in El Paso are telling us, you know, we're ready. We want hockey. We love it. We have this Coliseum down here that I didn't even know had a hockey team or had was capable of ice. Mm-hmm. But they're letting us know that they're ready for it. And I think about back to my time when I played with the Rangers, we did a preseason game out in Puerto Rico.
Well, oh, wow. I'm like,
it was unbelievable. But, and I have relatives in Puerto Rico, and we got there and it was great, but it just didn't hit. But you can't stop. You got to keep going, right? It can't be a flash in the pan. It's got to be that consistent message where hockey culture, Hispanic culture, Black culture, it's all together. Mm-hmm. So everyone feels included. And like I said earlier, we have the best game in the world, but let's go get them.
Yeah. Al, listen, man, this has been a great conversation. This is a blast. When I told the boys that we had you coming on as our first guest for the new season, everybody was just jacked up to have you on, and we wanted to get your perspective, you know, bringing that Latino heat. But we can't let you go without dropping some fire on us. Every show, each of our guests gives us their top five songs that help them get busy. So we got to hear from you, brother. What's your top five songs that get you hyped up for whatever it may be, going back to school, getting on the ice, you know, give me that Al Montoya top five.
Well, bear with me, because they're all over the place and each one has like a little bit of a story or a connection that it takes me to.
Give it to us.
First one, Barbecue Stain by Tim McGraw. It was a championship that we had won out in Slovakia when we were 15 years old.
Akil appreciate Tim McGraw for sure.
Right? Next one. You guys won't, I don't know if you can get on the board with this one, but Like a Prayer by Madonna. Guys, we had just won my first game in college hockey. We all go out as a team, and this song might as well have been our anthem, you know?
Okay.
It's crazy that you said that, because that's Elijah's favorite song you told me last week.
I knew it, Elijah. I knew we had it.
Little Madonna never hurt anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, true, true.
The third one, it's close to home. It's called Guantanamera.
Aye.
It's a poem by Jose Marti, which was a apostle of Cuban independence that was later sang by Celia Cruz, which is a fantastic song. It's the song of war heroes, and it's pretty cool. It's close to home. The fourth one, You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simon.
These guys don't know that song.
They don't know it? I know this song. You got to hear it. When I played in Long Island, it was my first real whack at the NHL, right? They're like, Garcinoe's like, here, it's your night. You're not coming out until I need to take you out. Mm-hmm. I went on a bit of a tear there. And if you guys have ever played at the Coliseum or ever had the chance, one of the best stadiums, it might not be around for another year, but one of the best places to see a game, be a part of a game. When you played the Rangers, there was more fights in the stands than on the ice, one of those. Mm-hmm. But I started playing well. And by the third period with like 5 minutes left, the whole Coliseum, they would start playing that song. Are you kidding me?
Really?
Yeah. I'm like right now I'm standing up. So that's got to be on there.
Elijah, you'd like that song. You'd like it. Yeah. I think Elijah would be a Simon and Garfunkel guy for sure.
I'll give it a listen.
Yeah.
And then the last one, I have to go Queen. Anything Freddie Mercury, I freaking love it. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all this music, it takes me to a certain point. I have some piano songs on there I won't even throw out there because those – it's that weird crazy goalie who's just like really calm and then all of a sudden he just wants to go out there and just, you know.
What a voice, Freddie Mercury, man. You know, he wouldn't fix his teeth because he thought that if he fixed his teeth, it would change his voice.
I believe it.
Man.
Genius.
Do you guys, Elijah, Akil, do you guys know Queen? Do you guys?
Of course I do. Akil,
no, I don't.
You see now. Last week we were giving it to Elijah for not knowing certain music, but Akil, how you don't know Queen?
Akil knows Queen. He just
does. He just doesn't know
Queen. If you played a Queen song right now, Akil be like, "Oh, I heard that."
Maybe.
You know. Are the champions, Akil?
Yeah, there you go.
I know that song. Yeah,
okay. Another One Bites the Dust.
Okay, I know that one too. Yeah.
So you do know Queen.
Okay.
Okay. Al, that's a beautiful top five. We're going to have that on our Spotify top five Soul on Ice hype song. So thank you very much for sharing that with our fans. And thank you very much for rocking with us, man. We really appreciate you. Akil, Elijah, I'll let you guys end it off with Al.
Yeah, just thanks for coming to kind of share your knowledge with us. Having our first Cuban on the show is pretty cool.
Cubano.
My family, we go to Cuba a lot and kind of got a special place in my heart for Cubans and Cuba. So thanks for coming to rock with us.
Same as Elijah. Thanks for coming on. It was awesome to speak with you. And, you know, obviously seeing you play quite a lot. So awesome to kind of get to meet you as well. And thanks for hopping on.
Before we go, Al, you know, like Akil was chirping you because he was saying that Al is lucky he retired because he was coming with the five holes. He was talking all this smack, bro. You might have to come out.
Oh no, I forgot.
But hang on. But how did you know? I can't stop the change up.
The change up.
That's Elijah. That's Elijah, not me.
The knuckle puck. I'll tell you what. The knuckle puck and the change up and. hockey for any goalie that moves fast is impossible.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And on that note, Al Montoya, thank you for joining us, my man.
Thanks for having me, guys. What you guys do is awesome. Keep it up the great work.
Thanks again. That's Al Montoya joining us, rocking with the best boys. Your thoughts on the Latino fire over there?
Really interesting guy. You know, obviously, I knew him growing up, obviously, and so it's pretty cool to get to talk to him, get to know him a little bit more, and just watching him talk, you could tell he was a goalie for me.
Really?
He's very calculated. He's like, you can tell his brain's all kind of all over the place, and I just knew he was a goalie. So it was awesome to talk to him, and thought it was a pretty good interview.
It is interesting you say that, because how he was talking, like he thinks about what he's going to say instead mm-hmm. of just saying that. And I didn't really equate that to, you know, being a goalie, but like I can see how that could be. E, what do you think?
I think Akil's lucky that he retired. Akil might get sent down to the coast if Al was still playing. And I think the one thing that I found really cool was when he was talking about school and how his grandfather said, like, you can never take knowledge away from somebody. And I think that's it's pretty interesting. And I think I'm hoping that some players or someone out there is listening to this episode and decides that they're going to go back and finish school because of the wise words of Al.
Yeah. I got to let you guys know, I just ordered that PS5. So as you young kids would say, the smoke's coming.
Well, you know how many times Elijah and I have like talked just amongst ourselves and just be like, Comey talks like he plays in like NHL, but if we were to play him, like he would have to just go exchange his PS5 for a typewriter or something, a typewriter maybe. Yeah. Like that.
This is what I want to hear. Got anything more?
I have a question. Serious
sure.
question.
Sure.
What controller settings do you use?
For what?
For your controller. Like,
this is going to be the first time I'm going to have a PlayStation since PlayStations first came out. I've always been.
No, he means like, do you use like the skill stick or do you use like X skill to
stick.
Pass?
What skill stick?
Okay, because someone said that you still use like NHL 94 default.
Who would say that? Who would
I don't
say
know. That? It wasn't me.
Who wasn't would say me. That?
I might have said me. You look like someone who would use the 94 default.
Because I'm an old guy. You think I just get that's all I would know. Eh? I wouldn't know how to use skill stick.
It wasn't me. Jerks,
okay.
It wasn't me.
I just want you to know that in a couple of days, let me get close to the mic on this one. In a couple of days, PlayStation 5 is going to be in my possession. That means I'm going to have the new NHL game. And that means anytime one of you two want to smoke, you just come and bring it. Because I'm taking off heads when I come to PlayStation. Heads!
So you said you're getting your PS5 in a couple of days?
Yes, sir.
All right, here's what I'm going to do.
Do it.
After I beat Kwame, I'm going to post the score on our Instagram page, on our Twitter page. Uh-huh. So I want you all to just be keeping your eyes open this week.
Are we locking in players or are we just going free-for-all?
Locking in players.
Yeah. You want to play forward defense or do you just want to play whoever? Because... Elijah, you seem like a guy that would just take one player and just have him go coast to coast, not even pass.
Yeah, this guy can't be serious right now.
Random question.
Yes.
Elijah, have you taken Kwame out for dinner for forgetting his birthday yet at Harbor 60 or no?
Well, unlike how you're living life in California with no snow, some nice weather, a beach, me and Kwame aren't even legally allowed to go
dinner.
Anywhere,
but he's not getting. Trust me, Akil. He's not getting away from it. I will get my dinner.
Oh, I don't want to get away from it. I want to go and have a nice dinner with Kwame when the time is right. But
yeah, and then when we're back in the mix, we're gonna throw a party in LA. I'm gonna host it at Akil's house, man. It's gonna be Good times, man. And, good times.
And Akil, I could take Kwame to like a McDonald's and we could eat the food in the parking lot, but he deserves better than that. And I'm going to wait until I can take him to a nice restaurant.
Thank you.
And we can enjoy our dinner properly.
Appreciate you, man. I appreciate you. Boys, before we go, we need to fill the people in on some really cool news. Last summer, you guys had a chance to be in your very first hip hop music video for a song called Legacy off the album with the same name. It's from a pair of talented producers who are also brothers. They call themselves 80 Empire. Shout out to Adrian and Luke. The album features Conway the Machine. And if you remember in my top five list last week, Conway had five songs on him. So, you know, he's hot. King Crooked, Fred the Godson, rest in peace to the homie Fred, a legend in the hip hop world. Master Ace is also on the album, BG, Knockout, and many more. You can find that album, Legacy, on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Tidal, wherever you get your music. Digitally look out for 80 Empire Legacy. We'll have some links on the podcast description. And on Friday, make sure you check out our Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, because we are going to put the video up. And yeah, boys, what was your experience like on that video? Like, did you guys have a good time doing that?
Yeah, I mean, the craziest thing was seeing your outfit you showed up in.
Which you'll see in the video, because I make a cameo in there as well.
Yeah, so you got to check it out. Good laugh there. But no, it's pretty funny to kind of do a music video. It was pretty cool. We just did some stuff that Elijah and I probably done with the Ice Dogs before for promo stuff. So it wasn't too different, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And like the family that kind of hosted us, they're super nice. And like Akil was saying, we've done some promo stuff like that, but when the video like actually came together, it looked like way better than we thought it would look. It looked pretty crazy. And for everybody out there, this is the flyest you will ever see Kwame look.
No, it's not the flyest.
So it's not you want to watch this video.
It's not even close to the flyest, kid. The old man brings the heat, bro. Like that's leisure wear. That's leisure freshness.
I'm not gonna say what you're wearing. I just want people to see it for themselves.
People, when you see the video this Friday, please rate my outfit and be honest, okay? Rate it. Rate it.
Call me. How old are you again?
What? I'm 50.
Oh, okay. So when you see it, just remind yourself. Call me 50 wearing this, right? But he's not 30. He's not 22. He's not 18. He's not 14 right. Like my brother.
Right, right. So this guy wants me to wear overalls and like a sailor's hat or something like that. That's what you. That's how you want me to dress, and it just embarrass you. You know, if I had to come on some old man style, you'd have been like, nah, nah, nah. I'm not standing beside this old guy. But when you saw the freshness, and remember, it's a music video. You know, you gotta come with it, man.
Kwame went to Urban Outfitters before he came to the music video shoot.
Okay. All right. You're going to disrespect the. I'm not even telling people what I'm wearing. Just go and look at it.
Just go watch the video.
Let's go watch the video. Video's dope.
You see me in there wearing an Adidas shirt. Hashtag ad. Hashtag sponsor me.
Nice. But
looking good in there.
I look better than you.
Not really. But you know.
Yeah, I do.
The people can be the judge of all three outfits. Once the video comes out, just go check it out.
Just remember, my hoodie smashes anything these guys wear. My hoodie smashed everything. Yo, go watch the video again when we get off the podcast. Go watch it. My hoodie smashes everything. So dope. They even have to get a close-up of it. All right. On that note, my friends, we're going to leave you with the song Legacy. We usually sign off with the Soul on Ice theme song, but today we're gonna play the song from the video that's coming out on Friday. Make sure you hit us up on all of our social media platforms. Big shout out to Brother B, always holding us down. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, IG, the whole nine yards. Hit us up. And next week is gonna be the start of Black History Month, so we've got some great guests lined up, so don't miss one of these episodes. Okay, so for Elijah and Akil, my name is Kwame, and we're out.
Legacy. We are on a borrowed time. Live forever through our rhymes. We do this for our legacy. Do it for our legacy. Early morning, sleepless nights. Paid our dues and earned our stripes. We do this for the legacy. For our children in the memory.
Yeah. I do this bitch for my legacy. Came a long way from when I caught my first felony. Police harassing, why they just won't let us
leave
be?
Me alone,
my daughter's home, I'm happy to let them free. The rims on the SUV, got the letter B. With all I've been through, it's hard to find less as me. It's hard to find a fresh as me. But I'ma make sure my two sons forever eat. I don't trust them, I don't let nobody next to me. I was showing love, thought he was finessing
thought
me.
He was slick, huh?
I guess we all on borrowed time. My homie ain't having strap, I let him borrow mine. I ain't have my pops around, but tell Carl I'm fine. I'm just going hard on my grind.
I got it from here.
Got scars on my body, no scars on my mind. So the charts, I'ma climb. Cause
we are on borrowed time. Retire, we been fire. This one's from Buffalo. Shout out to 80 Empire. They always stressing me, they wanna know the recipe. But it was destined, not even prison testing my legacy. Dream to win, I don't judge a movie till I seen the end. My girl asked me, can I be your legacy like Queen and Slim? But lame, mention my name and you'll get super flame. That's what they'll do for fame or chain face the horror. I'm from a block where you can place your order by the border. Grab a pot of Leo from the famous corner. Went to the feds at 20. What you think I'm doing at 16? That you only seen on the big screen. Say your prayer. See your demons at night when they appear. In here, stay on your P's and Q's. You gotta stay aware. Went to prison, serve my time. Body every word I rhyme. Now the charts, I'ma climb. Cause we are on borrowed time. Sweat and tears, but I know we didn't. Oh no, 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 Gigi Envy Tuchinaya.
It's our legacy, man. Shit.